This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Hello, I'm Katia Adler, host of the Global Story podcast from the BBC. Each weekday, we break down one big news story with fresh perspectives from journalists around the world. From artificial intelligence to divisive politics tearing our societies apart. From the movements of money and markets to the human stories that touch our lives. We bring you in-depth insights from across the BBC and beyond. Listen to The Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
We're in a cell. There are six metal beds. There's no window to see, but it's night. A knife is being pressed to a woman's neck. The Myanmar soldiers surrounding her want her password, access to her phone. She's refusing. In the corner watching is a young officer.
Very brave. She wouldn't break. She was prepared to die. They kept pressuring her with different words, along with the knife, and they started using a gun. Various tactics to, torture her. At one point, they even said to me, "Hey, you come and hit her." But I said, I didn't have the stomach to do it.
What So did have the stomach to do was quietly pull out his phone and hit record. A warning, it's disturbing what he captures. The soldiers eventually get bored, and So walks out, looking over his shoulder, his phone in his pocket. Back in the barracks in the early hours of the morning, when he thinks it's safe, hands shaking, he opens Facebook.
I looked for people I could trust. I didn't dare to give it out to anyone. It could backfire, and put me in grave danger. It was very dangerous. So I looked for groups that I could trust.
He thinks he's found that person. The audio makes its way to the pro-democracy movement, to the woman's family, with the prison details. It's hard for them to hear, but they're grateful. At the very least, now they know where she's being held and that she's alive. So is left feeling.
Very, excited. I was nervously excited because it could backfire. I was really worried that somehow they would know it was me. I couldn't sleep thinking about that.
So has become one of the first watermelons. Green on the outside and red inside. Outwardly, a soldier loyal to the green uniformed military that has just seized power in a coup. But inside, spying for the civilian pro-democracy uprising, whose symbolic colour is red. This is The Watermelons, a BBC Eye investigation for the documentary for the BBC World Service. I'm Rebecca Hinschke. So had always wanted to be a soldier. There's a photo of him after he finished training, age 24. In full uniform, he beams with pride.
It was a good time. There was a form of democracy, and the political situation seemed to be improving. I was proud, because my father was also a soldier.
He planned to be loyal for life to the powerful Myanmar military. But in February 2021, he woke up to this news.
The armed forces in Myanmar have seized power, detaining the country's elected leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, Foreign governments and international organizations have condemned the coup.
It's just outrageous. It's deeply disturbing. Democracy has been overturned by the generals.
Protests broke out across the country, a mass movement demanding the generals step aside. Jack Ung, who's working on this story with me, was reporting on the streets with his wife Po, a fellow journalist, when the crackdown began. They ran up the stairs of the nearest building. Local residents opened their doors to them.
We are in a safe house right now. And we saw the people are... People, we don't know yet whether they are shooting the gun, the real gun, or the just tear gas or sound gun. We don't know, but right now the protective force, they are now moving forward to protect the people.
So they are shooting people. They are shooting a lot of people now. They are really shooting. They are shooting. Everything.
The gas is kind of getting in the apartment where we are staying right now, and we found that some of the people, most of the young people, they are getting injured.
Arrested young protesters were dragged into So's barracks.
I saw right in front of me that they brought in innocent people, beat them, pounding them. They arrested young people and brought them to the barracks where I lived, where I served.
Journalists were jailed, media houses smashed up, the internet shut down. Jack and Po fled across the border to Thailand, and curfews were put in place.
There was a curfew after 8 p.m., so no one was allowed to come to the front of the barracks. A father and son came there after 8, so they were detained. They tortured the father first, in front of his son. The son was also punched. After that, they were forced to swim on the tarred road. You know, they were forced to crawl on it as if they were swimming. I was disgusted with the guys in my barracks.
When he talks about the incident of the father and son being tortured, his eyes were welling up with tears. And then when I asked him, "Were you ashamed?" his face suddenly changed, and there was anger mixed in with the sadness. He channeled that anger. While outwardly keeping his mouth shut, secretly, he was leaking military intelligence to protesters in his area.
I knew their names and addresses were on an arrest list in the barracks. Sayapha, you know, the military intelligence, knew where they all lived. When I saw the list, I informed those I knew.
Giving them time to run. They fled from Yangon, finding refuge in jungle camps run by ethnic rebels who've been fighting the military for decades for greater autonomy. Trained and armed by these ethnic militia groups, the protest movement turned into an armed uprising. A network of civilian militia groups called the People's Defence Forces, or PDF. So kept leaking them military intelligence.
I leaked information about troops, which group operated in what area, how many soldiers in each unit, which group was where and how many were left in the base. I gave them that kind of information.
On one side, a well-armed military, China and Russia supplying its weapons. On the other side, a rebel force, largely made up of people who've never fought before, former students, musicians and doctors. Leaked intelligence from the inside, is going to be vital to this resistance. Watermelons could make all the difference. Can't say where I am for security reasons, but I'm in a suburban house that's been turned into an office. Here, a group of people are glued to screens, computers and phones with various messaging apps up on them. And they're collecting information from watermelons, military moles or moles in the civil service or the police force. They're getting that information and then relaying it to the relevant rebel fighting unit. The opposition set up this watermelon unit 2 years ago to manage the growing number of spies.
Our watermelons hold different positions and different ranks, from just a soldier to higher-ranking officers. For a secure reason, I don't want to say how high-ranking they are, but just that, we have very senior ones. All of them are leaking information to us.
Win Ung, one of the unit's agents, has agreed to talk, as long as we don't use his name or real voice. He's a former intelligence officer who defected after the coup. You can tell he's very nervous, his hands slightly shaking. He's being very careful about the kind of information he's willing to give us in case it will jeopardise in some way this very dangerous and secretive operation.
There is a lot of important information coming in. We also have watermelons at every level of the military government, from the ministry down to village heads. This phenomenon is quite widespread.
His phone and computer beep almost non-stop while we talk.
Here is information about an airstrike. The timing of a fighter jet taking off and landing, and flight directions. With this, we can make preparations. If we know when a plane takes off from an airport, we can avoid and withdraw. If we have information about the troop movements, we can set up an ambush.
How do you know who to trust?
When someone contacts us to serve as watermelon, we ask them to send us their personal information and their military ID, and we can then check them out. We use our existing watermelon to verify their identity. There's always the chance that they might be double agents because the military intelligence is actively working to counter our efforts.
That night, we're given the contact of one of their frontline watermelons. He's a major who's been a military mole for over 2 years.
I'm with my producer in quite an echoey room, but this is somewhere we can be safe to talk. And I'm with my producer, Jack Ung. So how's this going to work?
So I'm going to hit the code that we were given. When the watermelon see that code, they know who I am, so they will talk.
But we're going to have to disguise his voice. But he's taking quite a risk to do this interview with us.
Now we hit the right moment, so I'm going to hit send. So now it's hitting send. So we're going to wait. So now he's online, he's seeing my message, and hopefully he replying back. We wait, okay, yes, he said yes, so we can call. Now I'm going to hit call. Okay, Sia, Minglava.
The call is exactly 30 minutes. That's the window he has. He's turned up the television in the background in the hope no one hears.
How is that?
It's good. His motivation is quite strong. After the coup, he really angry, and then he even decided to defect and then just fight. But then he thought, you know, fighting might not be a good option, because without terror rating inside the military, the revolution couldn't win easily. It was risking his life, he said, because this is this shouldn't be the coup. And then he's very angry, and he already, you know, thought all through. So he only wants to work with the government that is legitimate.
And how does he keep himself safe? Like, how is he leaking the information and not getting detected?
He now, in the military, he pretend to be really pro-military. He paint the picture of himself to be like a pro-military.
A really loyal guy in his actions and his words.
Yes, exactly. Very loyal to the military.
Must be so stressful living that double life.
Of course, of course. And
did he sound stressed when he was talking, or quite confident?
He didn't talk very loud. He's quite quiet and trying to maintain his tone and voice. So then you can also assume that he's confident, right? But in a way, he just wants to manage his tricks.
If caught spying, he would be killed for betraying an institution he was taught to have cult-like loyalty to. And he also has to live in fear of both sides. Winang admits that they can't really protect their spies.
On our side, we cannot announce that they are watermelons. We can't even let our forces know who the watermelons are. It's a very secretive walk. So watermelons need to be afraid if their unit comes under attack by our forces. We explain this situation to them. They accept the terms and conditions. Some even say, once it comes to that moment, don't hesitate, shoot.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are exposed. And in this new series, we investigate the dark side of the wellness industry, following the story of a woman who joined a yoga school only to uncover a world she never expected.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this.
Where the hope of spiritual breakthroughs leaves people vulnerable to exploitation.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
World of Secrets, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
You're listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service. The Watermelons, Myanmar Military Moles. In a jungle camp near the Thai-Myanmar border, rebel commander Dewa watches over the training of his latest batch of new recruits. His unit of the People's Defence Forces is called the Yangon Brigade, because their ultimate goal is to take Myanmar's biggest city, their home, back from the military.
We rallied peacefully on the streets. They cracked down on us, so we tried to protect ourselves. And we thought armed struggle was the only way to counter those with weapons. And that's why we fought back.
He's got a thin physique and wears studious glasses. Stereotypically, you'd expect to find him in an IT department or in engineering. Definitely doesn't look like the image of a rebel fighter. Yet he's one of the most wanted men in Myanmar, leading the revolution against the Myanmar military.
Now I consider myself a dead man walking. I am the enemy, and they will kill me whenever they find me. Rather than take me alive, they will torture me and kill me.
Now in his 30s, he was imprisoned for the first time when he was just 19. There's a photo of him when he was jailed for the second time, his father walking with him, his arm over his shoulder. Dewa likes this photo because he says his father looks proud of him.
Our family has been actively involved in politics since my grandfather's time until now. All three generations have been jailed.
Around the campfire at night, Dewa and his men sing a song called Stars. It's about fallen comrades. Their lyrics include this line: "We lived in fear for generations. Now it's time to fight." Most of the boys around him have tattoos and stylish sunglasses and jeans, but they've left that urban lifestyle behind them, and they've also left the future that they expected to have. When you ask them what they used to do, they were students in engineering, some were musicians, some wanted to do healthcare. But now all those plans have been put on hold.
It's really tiring. The struggle over all this time hasn't been easy, physically and mentally. I have many mental wounds now. So when the revolution is over and the country rebuilt, I will spend my life peacefully with my family.
Dewa got married just weeks before the military seized power in the coup. And now that dream of a peaceful life with his wife seems a long way off. He lies in a hammock under some trees at the side of their makeshift jungle camp and picks up his phone. He's never without it. It's a key weapon of war.
Hello.
He's talking to a spy, one of the watermelons, an informer in the Yangon region. As well as ground troops in this camp, Dewa controls underground cells in Yangon that are carrying out targeted attacks against the regime.
We act many using watermelon information. I regularly get details about who will travel, where they're going, and if I can attack. Watermelons are vital. Through them, we know the enemy's positions, movements, strengths, and plans. And we prepare our military operations using that.
He makes another call. This time, it's to one of his cells in Yangon. We're not given the details, but it's clear they're planning an assassination attempt.
We will do it inside the enemy's security perimeters. The target is a colonel.
Okay,
be careful about the security of our men. The enemy is losing in every direction. They are really worried that we would take Yangon, so they are trying hard to stop that.
Okay.
While his underground cell makes plans, Dewa is moving his ground unit. He's received a tip-off from a watermelon about a security post near a strategically located bridge.
We have been told about their capabilities, where their reinforcements will come from, and which route they will use to withdraw.
Dewa sets up his men on the opposite side of the bridge over a fast-flowing river. Sandbags are put in place, and snipers position themselves.
Our strategy is to mentally pressure the enemy day and night. The sniper watches them and shoots at them, even when they're fetching water and cooking.
They keep up the pressure for 9 days, shouting over the loudspeaker warnings to the soldiers inside the base. Come quickly and join the people. You have no way of escape, they yell. At night on the 10th day, they make a final push. They use a drone to target the security post. It goes up in flames. They claim to kill more than 30 soldiers. The next day, Dewa surveys the charred remains.
This is what we captured. This was their stronghold. And these places have not been surrendered for 40 years. Look at it now, all gone.
It's one of several major attacks against the military he's launched as a result of leaked intelligence from Watermelons. So 4 years on from the coup, who is now in control across Myanmar?
Yeah. Can you hear me, Callum?
I can hear you, Rebecca. Okay, yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. So I'll be
now back in London. I've jumped into a studio to talk down the line with one of the BBC's data team, Callum Thompson, who's in Birmingham.
Yeah, I'll speak about this level with maps and charts in front of me to help me.
The maps in his hands show the results of months of research that look at the power balance in more than 14,000 village groups across Myanmar.
So we're looking at things like who's in charge of police stations, are the courts functioning properly, all the local public services, who runs them, and do the public have to take their orders from any particular authority? And if that's the case, who are those people? So what we wanted to find out was, is it the military that's in charge or is it some other group? And what we found was that the military only retains control of about 21% of the geographic area of Myanmar.
So the military, the formidable Myanmar military, now only has full control of less than a quarter of Myanmar's territory. And then this patchwork of resistance groups, you know, pro-democracy rebels, armed ethnic groups, are controlling more than 40%.
That's right. But bear in mind, that's the geographical area. So when we looked deeper at this data, what we found was that actually the military has retained control in highly populated urban areas. We've used dark green to denote the military on our maps, and we've used pink for other forces. And you can definitely still see that military heartland of dark green around Yangon, around Naypyidaw. But as you move up the country into the dry zone, you can see it starts to turn into more of a patchwork.
It's a really stark picture, isn't it? I mean, you see this sort of almost like a sea of pink and then little dots of dark green in an area which was a former military stronghold.
That's right. So in the middle of the country, it's much more of a patchwork. You can see along the borders with India and along the borders with China, there are large swathes of pink, which is the resistance forces. But right in the middle of the country, you can see these dotted areas. You can see that it's a much more of a contested picture.
The Myanmar military did not respond to our request for an interview. They're aggressively trying to reclaim lost territory. UN Special Rapporteur for Myanmar, Tom Andrews, has this warning.
The junta is extremely dangerous. And as the junta loses control, their brutality increases. We have seen a significant increase in the use of aerial assaults and attacks on villages that they don't control or that they're losing control. We've also seen an increase in the level of brutality and depravity in ground assault.
They're also carrying out sweeps looking for watermelons. Late at night in the monsoon rain, a watermelon is smuggled into one of Dewa's camps. He looks exhausted. He's a 31-year-old sergeant who became a spy 7 months ago.
I was so nervous before reaching the liberated area, struggling to breathe, fearing getting arrested along the way. When I arrived, relief washed over me. I received a warm welcome from the resistance.
The watermelon unit smuggled him into the camp using a network of monasteries and safe houses, which operate like an underground railway. They helped him defect now because he was about to be sent to the front line, a fight
He didn't think he would survive.
Morale has plummeted across the ranks. Some soldiers believe they are invincible and can reclaim lost territory. But most just want to live. We are losing this war. I thought I would die if I didn't switch sides.
So, one of the first watermelons, fearing he could no longer stay undetected, fled across the border to Thailand. It's 7 a.m. and he's packing curries into plastic containers. He'll then head out to deliver them on his motorbike.
It's a simple job, not stressful at all. In the military, I never knew who or what to be afraid of. But here, no one troubles me. When we first arrived, I struggled. But slowly, everything started to fall into place. Before defecting, I worried about how I would survive. But things worked out as we went along. There are many families like ours taking on the challenges of building a new life here.
How do you feel about your friends that are still in the military?
There are some people who are addicted to power. They are happy that they can torture people. They like bullying the public. There are some people like that. There are many kinds of people. There are also lots of soldiers who want to stand with the people, but they can't come out for various reasons. Some of them have contacted me.
Some he's helped turn into new watermelons. Thank you for listening to The Watermelons, Myanmar Military Moles, a BBC investigation from the BBC World Service. It was produced and presented by me, Rebecca Henschke, with Jack Ung, Coco Ung, Charlotte Atwood, and Kelvin Brown. The sound engineer was David Crackles.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are exposed, and in this new series, we investigate the dark side of the wellness industry, following the story of a woman who joined a yoga school only to uncover a world she never expected.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this.
Where the hope of spiritual breakthroughs leaves people vulnerable to exploitation.
You just get sucked in so gradually. And it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
World of Secrets, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.